Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Bob DeMarco. On this edition of the show, I'm speaking with YouTube knife and EDC gear reviewer, Treddy. I've been a subscriber to Treddy since the day my second daughter was born. I discovered him and several others for myself during that agonizing wait. I'm pretty sure it was more agonizing for my wife, but, you know, for me too. And Treddy helped that time go by. Treddy, spelled 7Ready when you do your search, 7REDI, has been a YouTube go-to for years, bringing viewers unique custom knives, sometimes more readily available in Europe, as well as the latest, most buzzworthy production knives. And like me, he is equal opportunity when it comes to folders and fixed blades. His taste is sophisticated, his evaluations are thorough, and his delivery style is smooth and confident. And I'm really excited to talk knives with this Knife World alum. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell so you know when new videos are uploaded. Also, download us on the podcast app so you can hear us when you're not attached to YouTube, which is probably rare. And then join us on Patreon. That would be lovely, where you can help support the show in various ways and get some unique and exclusive content yourself. So you can do all that and check all that out on theknifejunkie.com. And for Patreon, be sure to go to theknifejunkie.com/Patreon. Again, it's theknifejunkie.com/Patreon. Treddy, welcome to the show. It's good to have you here, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Very cool and very uplifting intro for all the nice things you said about the channel there.
All true, sir. All true. I mean, and we can tell just by looking down on that beautiful leather mat filled with gorgeous and unique and different knives. I mean, some of these are, you know, low end. Some of these are very high end. And I love that sort of broad range of your collecting style. But just so everyone knows, I'm speaking to you, you're in Switzerland, and a lot of us don't know much about it. I've seen it from a train twice. It looked gorgeous, but I didn't get off. My wife fell in love with the place. I thought I might lose her to the country at one point. But what's the knife community like in Switzerland?
It's very sparse. That's one of the reasons I... So there is the Victorinox kind of Swiss Army knife crowd that is pretty large in Switzerland, Austria, Germany, and also some of the French-speaking countries. But like knives, like the stuff we see here, like modern folding knives and custom knives, it's pretty sparse and far and few between. There's also not like a large community where we kind of gather. There is some stuff like that in some of France and also in Germany. But in Switzerland, it's very, very rare you find like a guy on the street that is also into knives. I have now actually found a couple that live a bit around me, but it's very, very small. And it's also not something that is talked about quite a lot in the media or something like that. So it's a pretty underground thing here in Switzerland. That's also one of the reasons I started the channel, so I could share the stuff with more people.
That comes as a little bit of a surprise to me, because I know Switzerland as being much more permissive country in Europe than most others in terms of weapons, right? I mean, you're allowed to own firearms in Switzerland, right?
Yes, but it's mostly restricted to firearms, and that has its origin in the how do you say it in English? Like that it's a duty for every Swiss male to join the military service for a specific period of time, and it's also part of that service that you actually take your duty rifle home. And so they couldn't really outlaw guns because it would completely interfere with a mandated service duty. And for that reason, guns are very differently treated. In terms of knives, we can do more than Germany, for example. So that means we can have stuff that is one-handed opening and locking. Mm-hmm. And Germans can only have one or the other. So one-handed opening or locking, but not both. But we can't really have automatic knives except these super, super tiny ones. I got a couple of those. But everything automatic is illegal. Everything double-edged is illegal. Even fixed blades. But we don't have a specific, blade length limit. So it's very very sketchy, and you have to be on your toes. Also, everything assisted is completely illegal. Assisted opening knives, completely
really?
Illegal. So it's very weird how they came up with those rules, but that's how it is.
Yeah, those rules sound almost as arbitrary as the rules in the United States, though rules differ state by state with knives and guns. It's interesting to me that military age men and women, I guess, in Switzerland, have their battle rifles with them. And yet a two-inch double-edged knife is illegal. It's kind of interesting how these things work. I mean, to us, they're not mutually exclusive, but to lawmakers, I guess they are.
Just treat it like the scary things you see on TV. I mean, most people that actually decide these rules have no knowledge of the things. It's the same with guns, but with guns, they can't overcome that, legal hurdle that they have to allow it for some people, and then they can't completely outlaw it. And that's, our benefit. We also have, something like NRA, not exactly the same, but it's also a pretty strong for Switzerland's number count organization that tries to keep everything at least as it is or make it better. But we can have also, if you're not doing any service, you can own rifles, but just semi-automatic. You can own handguns. And it's pretty easy to get them, but it also has some slight differences from canton to canton, which are our states.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't really deny you getting a firearm if you're a law-abiding citizen, if you're over 18 and you don't come from a specific set of countries in whether it's some kind of conflict or people are known to have some issues with laws constantly. So if you're a Swiss-born 18-year-old male that is law-abiding, or female for that matter, it is not really possible to deny you the access to the firearm.
That's an interesting approach, because if you want it, you can get it. It's not necessarily I guess that makes it a right, but it doesn't seem like it's necessarily a pervasive cultural element.
So there is a lot of sports shooting, and of course, because most males, and it's only males that are required to go into military service at the moment. So females do not have to do any kind of service. There is also a weapons-free service that you can do where you help out in some where you have our senior citizens or in hospitals or things like that. But it's all also not only for male 18-year-olds. Now I kind of lost my train of thought there.
Actually, this is all interesting to me because you have, the premier YouTube knife channel from Switzerland, probably the only one I think I know of, but you have an extremely varied range of knives that you feature on your channel. How do you get all this access to these knives in a place that maybe isn't as, excited about them?
So, almost none of these are bought in Switzerland. So I buy them from US websites. Of course, if you buy customs, you normally try to buy them from the maker if you can get access to them through Instagram or through going to shows. But I only have been one time to a show when it was not a custom knife show. It was the SHOT Show, but for Europe in Germany. But this is a long time ago. And now I will go to a custom knife show for the first time in the beginning of February. So I will try to get some nice stuff home from there. But most of this stuff is bought through Instagram, through Facebook knife sites where you can buy and sell stuff, and through US retailers that have great international shipping costs. Because if I buy it there, it's just much cheaper than if I buy it here, even counting in shipping. There is a couple of stores in Switzerland that sell this kind of stuff, not customs, but production knives.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have, on occasion, some good offers. But in general, the price levels are much higher just because of VAT tax and all the things that are involved with that, and the general higher price level for everything in Switzerland.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about your channel and the birth of it. Obviously, we all get to a point when anyone who has a knife channel on YouTube gets to a point where they're understanding that the people around them are not interested and they don't want to hear about it. And so there are others you can bark out in, you know, to the clouds, and there are others who will hear it and appreciate it. So tell me how you birthed your channel here, and what your goals were, and where you want to take this.
So it actually started out. So first off, I wasn't really into knives and gun in the beginning, but then I have two older brothers. They went military service, and one of them got quite into guns and everything. And then he started watching Nothing Fancy on YouTube. And sometimes I would walk in and watch a little bit and find it kind of fun, the like pretty budget friendly knives. And then in the end, we decided we gotta order some. And then there was one store in Switzerland that had like a $25 in US pricing, it was like 50 Swiss francs in Switzerland, like a little Kershaw chill. I still have that. I could get it. Just hold on for a second.
Sure. I love that Kershaw chill. How cool is it that Tredi was inspired by Nothing Fancy? Who wasn't inspired by Nothing Fancy? Maybe some of the third and fourth generation knife reviewers, but look at this. RJ Martin.
Original. This knife is kind of the cause of everything here on the table. It has been well loved. Some kind of try to get another finish on the blade has been sharpened quite a bit. Also had a loose clip for some time, but it still works. It's not super great in terms of flipping action, but you can get it. And it is just looks a little bit like a folding steak knife. Mm-hmm. And I actually ordered the half serrated version, but I just got the plain edge, which in the end was a good surprise. But I just thought that the serration looked cool at that time. And I got this one, and then I got really into knives, bought some other budget-friendly stuff. And the first video I actually did was not about about knives. It was about a CO2 air gun that I got for Christmas, I believe. But it was a really fancy one, and there were no videos on it. It was like a lever action. It was like a brass kind of housing and wood stock and everything. And I did a video on that, and that really blew up. And I couldn't really understand. It was really crappy, like recorded with a webcam and really, really bad quality. But it got up until now, it got like 180,000 views, more views than any other of my videos ever.
Wow.
But then after that, I thought, this is kind of easy. I probably could do that with other stuff as well. And then I started doing videos on knives. And also I got in that time frame, I got my first revolver and then a pistol. Later, I still own those as well, and did some videos on those. And from then, it kind of just did the occasional video when I got something new in, and it spiraled kind of out of control from there. But I never had any kind of real ambition with the channel. I just wanted to kind of share this stuff. And then, later on, I did Instagram and so on and so forth, and came in contact with lots of people that do the same thing, but mostly located in other countries.
I think it can be a sort of therapeutic thing in a way. I'm not putting too much on making these videos, but really you have an irrational desire for acquiring ever more knives. I'm not just saying you, I'm saying us. And but also to evaluate them, and then you want to let some of them go. You can't have all the knives. There's a desire to talk about them because there's some weird, inborn desire for these things. And most people don't get it. So I see how doing these kind of videos could spiral out of control. You get your hands on that Kershaw chill. You're like, who is this guy, RJ Martin? You know, like he either designs knives that are $20 for CRKT, or he makes custom knives that are $2,000, you know, that are amazingly gorgeous. So starting a channel seems like a logical thing to do to someone whose obsession is spiraling.
For sure. And another thing that it has become more and more since I do lots of buying and selling and trading and things like that is it is like a little an area where I can kind of take a history of the collection and can go back and look at everything I owned at some time. And so I never really lose the knife for good, because I still have like photos on Instagram or a video at least of it showing it off. And so I have like a little list of stuff that I owned, even if I had to let it go to to get something new.
Yeah, sort of an archive of your of your hobby there. So how did your taste in knives, Jim, could you go wide for a second? I saw a knife that I can't see in this view, but I want to ask about it, and maybe this is a good segue into this question. But okay, in the very lower right of our view here, and if you're listening, it's just a he just picked it up. I don't know what it is, but it's really cool. How did your taste for knives develop, and how have they gotten to where they are? What would you say your taste is?
It certainly has gotten much more expensive. For example, if you compare these two.
Yeah.
So, at first, I just had like budget friendly knives, nothing really over 100. 100 was really, really expensive. The first knife that I bought, that I thought, wow, that's quite a bit much money for what I'm getting, was a Mannix 2, the regular first kind of with the ball lock and black G10, I believe at the time, S30V. That was a knife that I thought, wow, this is quite expensive, and I don't know if that was a good decision or not. But from there, it got more and more involved, not just in terms of pricing, but also getting more involved to see what I really like. So it took me quite a long time to get like zoned in on the things that I like and to figure out which knives stay longer in the collection for which reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is mostly customs. I really like front flippers. This is like the primary mode of deployment that I really fancy, just because I think it's very functional, especially for EDC. It makes a knife very easy to carry. It doesn't get in the way of anything. You can really open it fast and reliably, and it gives the knife just a very complete overall form, also in the closed position. So I'm really, really liking front flips at the moment. For about a year or two, these have really been a focus. But then I also like stuff that is really pushing the envelope of what is possible with like modern machining, like this one here. This is a VC Edge interface. This is like a 3.6 inch blade. This has an S30V like cutting edge, and it weighs 1.7 ounces.
What are the striations there? Are those
That's carbon. It's like a mostly carbon fiber blade.
Get out of here. So if you're just listening, he's holding up a beautiful blade that alternates from the edge. The edge is silver, and then it has alternating concentric blade shape stripes that are black, silver, black, silver, and the black part is carbon fiber. So this blade is half S30V and half carbon fiber. This is amazing.
And the handle is mostly carbon fiber, and then you have your inset titanium lock bar that has also been carved out massively to save some weight. So you get a 3.6 inch full frame lock folder that weighs 1.7 ounces and has an amazing action without having any kind of weight in the blade to speak of. But it fires out like crazy and is extremely, extremely smooth. So this was my knife of the year for 2021.
Your point in bringing up the weight of the blade is that a lot of smooth action can be attributed, yes, to bearings, but also the weight of a blade. If you have a big, heavy blade, naturally it's going to drop if it's on bearings. But what you're saying here is this blade is really damn light, and it's on bearings, and it has action like it's a heavy blade.
Absolutely, yes. And I think that's very, very hard to achieve. And this is like a very early custom of his. It's like the number 22.
Who is?
And this guy is really a guy to watch. I think he could be like the next Brian Nadeau. This is really amazing. And I like stuff like that. So really space age high-end stuff. But I also like to have handmade customs with lots of natural materials, like the Brad Zinker here with some sandbar stag.
That's
I also got some stuff with mammoth recently that I really like.
Okay. So I want to get to the mammoth, because that's my favorite material that I don't have. And before you continue, because I asked you to tell me about your collection and you're doing that dutifully, but I need to stop you because I want to go back to the blade with the carbon fiber in the and S30V. No, the one before that, because I want to see that one too. Jeez. All right. So, but this knife here, tell us who this is again so people can do their research.
That's VC Edge is the company name. And the guy that's making this, it's like a one-guy company, is Jason Van Camp. I believe he's located in California. and is a machinist and a knife maker. And I think this is his first model. There have been some iterations on how he does the lock bar. And he now also does the versions with M390 in terms of the actual cutting edge of the blade. And this is the VC Edge interface. There is a video on this knife on my channel. I believe an unboxing and a full review. And you can find some links and some more information there if you're interested. He sells these in drops, but he doesn't do a lot of them. I believe he has not even done 50 of these. So he does a couple of them and then makes it available through his website where you can get a hold of these interfaces.
You know, this is something that's cool about the knife world in general. I mean, look at this beautifully handmade and machine-made piece, very unique with that alternating carbon fiber and S30V blade and all this. And this is a guy whose job is probably not this yet. And yet he's making knives that are at the pinnacle of this industry. It's interesting that way. Like, in a way, it's like music or art or anything else. Like, someone who's relatively undiscovered could be making the next Mona Lisa or the next, Abbey Road, but we just don't know about them yet. And then as people like you who bring this wide and give this guy an opportunity to become, you know, something more. I think it's a cool loop there, because it's a knife maker who's got another job innovating because he likes knives and he likes machining. And then, it gets to the hands of someone like yourself and he goes wide. People see how amazing this work is.
Just also speaking to that, he also has a YouTube channel where he actually shows how he's making these, how he's evolving them. You see the CNC machining. One time he actually showed all the different ways he redesigned the lockbar that didn't work. He had like 50 of these lockbars that were just too heavy or didn't work for some kind of reason. And that's really interesting when you want to know how laborious it can be to get something so perfect as an end result, how long it takes, how much scrap you're producing. But that's really, really cool to see that on his VC Edge YouTube channel, and also showing knives that are not very well known to the general public or the general knife enthusiast public, which is certainly not the general public, is one of their main purposes at the moment of the channel. So really trying to get stuff out in the limelight that I can provide with the channel that people have not seen at all, because I can certainly not in competition with the larger channel for getting every new CVV in and showing that. So
right.
I'm not even going to try that. I just want to show new stuff that hasn't gotten the attention that I think it might deserve. And VC Edge is certainly one of the makers that I would put in that category.
I mean, I think it's a smart niche to carve out. There are a lot of really good, I call them the trusted voices. There are a lot of trusted voices on YouTube who are getting all the new CVVs, and they have great videos. I mean, I love watching those videos. But if that's not what grips you, you can't try and be that, because it won't work. Eventually, you'll run out of steam. You won't run out of steam with the things you love here. I want to work backwards on two more of the knives that you teased us with, and we'll start with the Brad Zinker with the Stag. This thing, this is a front flipper. You picked this up when you were talking about how one of your favorite new design trends of the past couple of years is the front flipper. Tell us about this knife.
This was actually my first, in the end, I ended up with two of these knives, which is a funny story. Like, pretty much the identical knife, just differing in the steel was used and the exact version of the sandbar stack. But I actually always liked Mr. Zinker's work. But I really hadn't had any kind of front flippers that he makes on my radar. And I just wrote him on Instagram, see if he does any kind of his knives also in a front flipper. And he said, yes, he does this is called the Urban Trapper Arc, because it's like more curved than the regular Urban Trapper. And it's also available in a regular kind of flipper. And he has done it pretty cool here. He has like cut off the flipper and give it some jimping, so it actually has still a functional purpose when you're holding the knife.
Nice.
And then in the end, I decided to order one of these. And I think this is one of my first knives that I got like ordered, built to my specifications from a maker directly. And Mr. Zinker is an absolute super great guy to deal with and very, very accommodating. And then I bought this, and this was like a million years in postage. This was like sending all around the world. It was like 6 months or so. It was just on its way around the world. That's and painful. Then we thought it was lost. And then he offered, out of the kindness of his heart, just to build me a new one. He had the complete, I just paid for one, and he built me a second knife.
Oh, that's so cool.
That had different blades. I think this is an L-Max. Oops, I just bumped the camera. This is an L-Max. The other one was in CPM 154. Also, sandbar stack, but of course, in different kind of natural version of it. So it looks a bit different pattern exactly. And that one arrived, and about 2 months after I got the replacement knife, this one arrived as well. And in the end, I had two, and of course, I paid him for the second one as well.
Yeah.
Because it was so kind to do that. But in the end, I actually kept the, I believe this is the second one, excuse me. I actually kept the second one he made because I just like how the pattern looks like a fake bolster or something
here. Yeah, yeah.
On this particular model. The other one had a little bit more pattern going on, but not in such a interesting way as we have it here. But I couldn't keep both. I would like to, but I got something other very cool from him with some of the funds I got from selling the other one. But this is amazing just because it shows like handwork and hand craftsmanship on such nice natural materials.
He
chamfered the stag right there with the inset screws, and it feels so nice in the hand. And this was like one of the key moments that actually spoke to me and said, I have to focus on custom knives. This is what I enjoy in acquiring knives and having knives. And this is a great custom to carry. This is so nice and slim, great functional pocket clip deep carry. The action is amazing.
Beautiful.
And has a nice hand drop set and everything. So one of my favorite customs to actually carry and use. And also one of my favorite custom knife makers, actually.
So you had 154 and an L-Max. You kept the L-Max, but it wasn't because it's L-Max. It's because you like the pattern on the stag, right? Is that right? You kept the L-Max? Okay, so and something else about this shift to custom knives is developing a relationship with the knife maker during the process, you know, and discovering that there are humans behind these. Obviously, we know that, but getting to know those people and working with them and knowing that even though it's a custom knife and you have your ideas for it, I want this steel, I want this handle material, that they will take all of that information and interpret it in their way. And that's what you're going to them for in the first place. Otherwise, you make your own knives.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And I always saw, I watched, of course, videos like from Jim Skelton and guys that just show off custom knives. And they always talk, yeah, it's not about primarily the knives. It's about talking with the maker and getting a relationship. And I always thought, this is so corny. Of course it's about the knife. Why would you buy the knife? It's not primarily about the knife. But I just learned specifically about in this experience that there is really something there. And that's why I have ordered a couple of knives from Mr. Zinker in the past. And the latest one I ordered was this one.
Oh, God, that's gorgeous. Jeez.
There is a lot of special things going on here because this is actually a size that he wasn't even offering. So this is an Urban Barlow in a flipper version. And normally there is only a 3-inch and a 3.5-inch. This is a 3.25-inch version. And they normally only have standoffs. This has a Damascus backspacer that he designed specifically for this knife. He even sent me the CAD kind of drawing and to see if I was fine with the design of this backspacer, which I thought was really cool. It has some jeweling on the inside of the liners.
Let me describe this for a second, Treddy, for those who are only listening.
Sure.
This is, imagine a Brad Zinker Urban Trapper, but this is called the Urban Barlow. So it has a very large and long bolster that goes about a third of the way down the handle. In a dark, beautiful dark gray titanium, I think,
it's or is zirconium. That
zirconium?
Yeah,
and that graduates into some sort of gorgeous bone or stag or what is this? Is this mammoth?
That's
mammoth. So this is like a really incredibly beautiful version of something that you kind of have seen from Brandzik: long, slender, gorgeous knife, just really with some beautiful and it's got this Damascus blade. What is this Damascus blade?
It's a damn steel. it may be Thor. He built actually two that looked very similar to this. Mm-hmm. This has the gold anodized liners because it was more yellowish in the mammoth, and then he did a different Damascus pattern with a little bit more bluish greenish in the mammoth, and then he anodized it blue. And I just like the more goldish tone on the titanium better. So I actually went for this version. I believe this is Thor, but I'm not 100% sure on the pattern of the Damascus.
Thor. Okay. It's a beautiful knife. It's unreal. I'm sure it's robust as hell, but when you look at it, it looks like a piece of jewelry. It is, man jewelry, of course, but yeah, it is.
That was what I was going for with this build. I wanted the, like, ultimate gentleman's folder. God. And I think he kind of did a great job here.
I have something I want to ask you, and it's a big topic. So before I get to that, pull up that knife that we hadn't had a chance to see that was on the lower right. What is this?
This is also like a knife from a maker that I think needs a lot more attention. This is a Dutch maker called Michel Timmermans from MT Knives. And this is his Genesis model, which is the first model that he ever made. There have been different kind of variations. So there is the one, there is the two, and I believe now there is the 2.1 version of the Genesis. The 2.1 has just a little bit of shorter bolster because the bolster is quite large on this one here. And this is a larger knife for my collection. You see, most of my stuff is around 3 or 2.75 if you look at this one. To like 3.5 max. I don't really have a lot of stuff that is over that in terms of a folding knife. And this is just at 3.5 in terms of overall length. And this is just an absolutely gorgeous design. I believe the blade is RWL34, and he did a finish on the blade that he hasn't done before, and that I only have seen before on this Wii knife, the Thug, I believe.
Yes.
Dark hand satin finish. And I really, really wanted that finish. And I spoke to him and he said, yeah, he will try it out on a spare blade. And if it works, he will offer it. And he did an amazing job here. And I think it goes so well with the zirconium bolsters, the snakeskin carbon fiber scales, zirconium large backspacer, dark tumbled titanium pocket clip, 3D milled, and then bronze anodized. Pivot colors. It's a liner lock. It runs on bearings and has pretty much amazing action.
My God, this is a very, very beautiful knife. I personally am extremely fickle about carbon fiber. More and more as the years go by and more interesting patterns come out, I'm coming to this is that carbon fiber is outrageous. What'd you call it?
Snakeskin,
because that's what I was going to say python, but that's the micarta. This really does look like snakeskin, and with its gold flecks and its irregular sort of scales, this is a stunning knife. So this guy is MT Knives.
Yes, he's also on Instagram, and there is a video on this on the channel, of course. I believe also unboxing, and on these custom knives, I try to do unboxing and full review, so that I can get like the most exposure on the knives.
Right.
This is really amazing. It's heavy, of course, because you have large zirconium bolsters, a very large zirconium backspacer. So it's not something I carry very regularly. It's more of a collection piece and around the house knife, but it's just a gorgeous design. Absolutely gorgeous blade with a swedge at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice execution on the plunge grind. Mirror edge. It's just absolutely gorgeous.
It is. So Treddy, what are your criteria for evaluation? You get a knife, what I like about your channel a lot is that you have wide range. You're not just showing custom knives. You're also showing knives that are production knives that people are talking about or that are interesting. I assume that they all get, like this Hogue, I assume they all get kind of the same view. Naturally, as you go up in materials, you're going to expect more. You go up in price, you'll expect more. But what are the criteria for evaluating a knife for you?
So it comes pretty natural. What I really like is being very, you build the stuff for a specific purpose, and then everything kind of fits or makes sense in that kind of environment that you picked out for yourself. So if you build a really burly, overbuilt knife, you shouldn't go with very thin stock. I'm not one of the guys that says it has to have a super thin cutting edge for everything and be extremely light. It has to fit its purpose that it was built for. And of course, materials and price always play a certain role, but of course, I am a bit more lenient in custom knives when it comes to specifically blade materials. I love it when you have a custom knife that is using 20 CV or other kind of higher end cutting edge blade materials, but I can see when some like part-time maker or maker that is just starting out has to charge a bit more for steels that are not cutting edge, like RWR34, CPM154, things like that. But I certainly wouldn't recommend a custom knife that uses subpar steel like HCR or something like that, but you don't see that. And then, of course, it's about craftsmanship, fit and finish, grinds, of course, which, for example, on this knife is absolutely amazing.
Who's this? Like,
this is the Dmitry Ozarenko Runa. It's a Russian maker from St. Petersburg. It's also pretty, it's not that well known. And he's releasing these in three different sizes. This is the smallest one, one of the first he ever built. And he also is going to release them in three different blade shapes and three different opening methods. So you will have a hole, you will have a thumb stud, and something else that I kind of forgot, but very, very cool maker and very amazing grind. The blade was the main thing that sold me on this particular blade shape here. They have a hollow ground swedge, hollow ground main bevel, this very fine media blast finish that really brings out the lines on the blade, super thin cutting edge here for a small EDC blade. That certainly makes sense. And then, of course, action is a very important part. But also, again, it has to be the right action for the knife and for the design it is intended to be. For something like this, I don't need an extremely snappy, slick, open action, because this, for me, is a knife that is more of a slow and controlled opener, especially with the thumb disc. But it certainly is nice if you can middle finger flick it, if it's fidgety, and of course sharpness. It's like the standard things that we guys look for. I don't have a specific kind of set, but when you pick up a knife, you notice the fit and finish, you notice the grind, the action, if it has a in the closing action, if you kind of hang up on the detent pole or not. You certainly know that it doesn't have to be drop shotty, it just has to have a refined action. So I don't have like buzzwords I look for. I have like the overall feel, and I try to convey that in my videos, that you really see what I mean when I describe the feel of the knife in hand, because I think that's the most the hardest and the most important part to cover in these videos. Everybody can look up stats and and things like that, but you have to kind of convey the actual feel of the knife and what it makes you think about and how it actually performs in you.
Yeah, I feel like you look at the internal logic of the knife itself. I know you compare knives to other knives sometimes, but it's more like for what this is supposed to be. You know, this is a $20 Kershaw, or this is a $1,000 custom knife. For what it's supposed to be, does everything within its sphere work for its sphere?
And how well is it done? So if he uses carbon fiber, did he polish it? Does it have some voids? Does it fit with the rest of the finishes that he chose for that model? Which sometimes may be my error when I combine stuff that is not really, that doesn't really go together well. But just to see if the thing he set out to do was done to a degree that I think is well done.
Is this a Pinkerton you're holding up?
Yes. And it's so thinly ground. It's completely insane. Look at the tip.
God, he's an amazing knife maker.
Dirk Pinkerton. He's also super underappreciated. He's more well known, but he should be much, much more like praised about and spoken about. Also, this is a Pinkerton design. The ties are there.
If you would hold, pick it back up. I'm not sure what it was, but it had the Westinghouse micarta on the upper left.
That's the Casey Gray.
Okay. This is the Casey Gray. So this looks to me, first of all, it's stunning and gorgeous. I love this sort of burnt yellow ochre color next to the steel color. This color combination really hits it with me. Same thing with the MT knives, with the flex in the carbon fiber. That sort of gray and yellow combination really gets me. But with this knife, it looks like that swedge you could sharpen and it would hide nicely. Oh, it looks like a pretty fat swedge, but I noticed that it sunk completely beneath the handle. And I was wondering if that was a feature or just a coincidence. I'm always looking for an opportunity for a double edge because I'm a dork.
You could certainly, like, the first, like, three quarters, you could actually have him sharpen it. I might have seen one because he does also this. This is the Squeaky model, which is a pretty funny name. But he does these also in a lot of different versions. This one has a zirconium thumb disc, but there are also thumb stud versions. There's also front flipper versions available of these. And I actually did buy this on the secondary, so I never got the knife directly from Casey Gray. But I had to send it back because the guy I bought it from actually screwed me over. It had massive blade play because, like, one of the washers was missing. Oh, and then I just could send it into Casey Gray. He took care of everything, sharpened it up as well. And now it's, like, perfect again, which also shows you there are very, very kind and great people that are building knives. And that's the thing you get with custom knives. You always have, like, your maintenance guy at the ready if you're having it from a great maker. Because I wasn't even the first customer. I never gave him money for this knife, but he still stands behind his product and did fix that issue I had with the knife. That was absolutely not his fault at all. And he didn't charge me for anything, just, of course, the shipping I paid.
That's classy. That is part of what you're getting from a custom maker. And you know what? Like, there are a lot of budding and up and coming custom makers that you can discover on Instagram and be on the ground floor of and get some of their work while it's still not so expensive. And you can really develop a relationship with someone and also the knife itself. Who do you think is doing it best? Like, who do you think is the most innovative, most interesting maker right now?
I would have to go with BC Edge.
Okay.
Like, newer makers that are not well known for like modern folding knives, it has to be. This really went completely out of the comfort zone. Was the first time since I'm in the knife collecting game that really struck me as completely out of the ordinary and something completely different that I haven't heard of could be done in such a perfected way that he has done here. And for that, the only his 22nd folder that he has made. It's just amazing.
Okay, so we're also gazing at your beautiful table here, strewn with gorgeous knives. And the last folder I really want to talk about, because I also want to hear your fixed blade knife philosophy, but I see that Rockstead lurking in the lower left corner. Tell me about this company and, like, there's like some magic involved in these knives. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so Rockstead is also one of these companies that you always aspire to. It's a bit like Chris Reeve, but even a step above that. Mm-hmm. Because you always, if you're on YouTube or on Instagram, you always see mirror polished, black coated blades, this very flowing line handle with the ray skin inserts. And of course, these are very expensive, and these are considered even by Rockstead themselves production. These are not custom knives, but they cost as much as some of the customs here on the table. And this is like the modern way of Japanese knife making. And they really have a completely different feel and just aura about them, comparing it to everything else, to any custom, to any high-end production knife. Or Maytag, this just, a Rockstead just feels different. It starts out with their kind of clamshell Ergol aluminum handles. They also have some different models, but like the most iconic ones are these, which is the Ku, which is a smaller version of the Shin, which is the most talked about Rockstead ever, which is just a larger version of this with a 3.5 inch blade. This is about a 3 inch blade, but the design is like identical on the Shin. That makes this knife extremely ergonomic. you also cannot feel the poker clip, which is just a like smoked, bent over steel clip, but that really curves around in a way. You see, it's very the very intricate 3D shape in the 3D space. So it's not just going down; it like curves around and has different heights along all the areas here. And that certainly is what makes it disappear when you're holding the knife. Also, this fits my hand size perfectly. That's why I actually went with this. Unfortunately, this model is actually discontinued. So this will never leave the collection because it will be really hard to get this. And then, of course, in terms of blade steels, I think they work mostly with two. This is like the less expensive version with the YXR7, which is a not a stainless steel. It's a tool steel. That also shows you that it makes sense that they develop this amazing super high hardness DLC that they can bring to a mirror polish like they have it done here on this knife. And then there is the ZDP-189, which you certainly know from some of Spyderco's knives, but they do hardening like nobody else. I believe this is at the YXR7 here. I have to look at the card. You actually get a card and every single knife has been specifically hardened, tested. You can see here below the thumb stud, that little point, that's actually the hardness testing divot right there.
Right.
And then you get a certificate, and they write on there, I believe it's 66.7 or something like that on this one here with the YXR7. And these cut like crazy, but you have to send them in to Rockstead to get resharpened when they get dull. But you also are getting... Where I bought this, you're actually getting a special strop with some special solution and everything. So these are amazing.
I mean, this thing is outrageously beautiful. And just watching you open and close it slowly like that, it just looks pleasing in every way. And the access to the lock bar is gorgeous. The milling, the ray skin inserts. Oh my God, the action. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. What I find kind of funny and out of character for the design, though kind of charming in a weird way, is all the billboarding. On this side, it says the name of the blade. It has the Japanese character and then a number. And on the front, it's got Rockstead and their giant logo. And then on the beautifully, very interestingly milled pocket clip, like you said, complex, it says Made in Japan on it.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think that's... They really... do these things for a very long time. I don't know when they started out, but I think their main line of knives is very much unchanged from when they actually started out. So they've been doing and perfecting this for a really, really long time. And I think they just do the things like they have done it for a very long time. And I think that is certainly a relic of earlier eras to just stamp in Made in Japan there on the clip in a very uninspired form. But the other billboarding here on this knife, I actually don't mind because it's done so sleek. So they have a large Rockstead logo, but it is not like lasered on there or like printed on there. It's actually like carved in there. And it doesn't have any kind of contrast in terms of color. It just is very sleek in there. And on the other side, you have the same thing. You get your individual number there. And of course, it says Ku and the Japanese character. Of course, I probably could go without the Ku because I know that and just go with the character, but that is very nitpicky. And since I've done it for a long time like this, I certainly don't think they need to change that.
I mean, I personally think that the billboarding, including the Made in Japan in uninspired font on the clip, is actually very charming because there's a trend right now. And I guess I agree with it overall to be very austere. With your markings on your blade to be very, you know, sleek and simple. And this, like you said, it's a bit of pride. It's a bit of, you know, something that's been going forever. And God, I love this. Is this a zero ground edge? I'm looking at it. Is it convex or what's the edge?
It's a convex edge. Yeah.
Okay. I got to get myself a Rockstead. I have to get a Rockstead Tretti and a Shirogorov. I feel like they're both moral imperatives and then I can move on with other production knives and customs, but those are two knives I don't have and have never even experienced, even at Blade Show, never experienced either one.
These knives certainly change your perspective in terms of high-end production knives. They do it differently, so the Rockstead is more of a in terms of using, it's special. In terms of cutting the hit, it's really special. Ergonomics are great, and of course the treatment of the blade itself and the hardness are something to behold, and the very unique way of how they do the handle and everything. So the whole overall package is special, and Shirogorov is mostly just the perfection in machining and, of course, the action. Because even though I have lots of custom knives, my Shirogorov, the larger one, the F95NL, is one that has the best action ever. And that's one of the least expensive Shirogorovs you can get.
The F95? I'm writing it down. That's the one with, you have one with the green micarta inlays, right?
Yes. That's the
NL. There it is. So, okay, this is the exact, and I think maybe I developed this while watching your video. This is the exact Shirogorov I want. Cause this has the 3.75 inch blade.
I believe it's 3.75. It's one of the largest knives in the collection, so it's probably 3.75. This is really, for a large knife, this is absolutely amazing. I didn't give it any kind of input. I just disengaged the lock bar and turned the handle a bit, and it just falls into, it's amazing.
All right. When you lose interest in this and you think it's just kind of lame.
It's one of my standard size comparison folders together with the Neon Zero. So I really can't let it go.
I'm trying to pressure you publicly. No, I really love that knife. And Epic Snuggle Bunny, another favorite reviewer, has that very, or used to have that very same model. And I think that's the one I have to pursue when it comes time. And I don't know if they even make them anymore, but I think it's beautiful.
I think these are quite readily available, and they're like $650 or something. So for sure, it's not super crazy.
Send me two or three. Just kidding. So I want to know now, with all these gorgeous things here, what is your grail? What's your grail knife?
Yeah, that's quite hard. I certainly would love to have a David Lesbeck, some of his folders.
I knew it. Me too. Sorry, I'm sorry to jump on your words, but when I asked you that, I was thinking a David Lespect would look perfect on that table.
Yeah, that's one of the things I try to acquire on that European custom knife show I go to. But it certainly is also some of the very well-known U.S. makers, like something from Richard Rogers would be awesome. Like I had the Finco, like the CRKT Finco. That would be great, or his Axion or Axon, like a very streamlined flipper that he has. Those would be amazing to actually own, but these are really a bit above my comfort zone in terms of like primary price of admission, so to say.
Right. Well, then, okay. So I'm seeing the fixed blades, and I want to find out what your they're obviously a different caliber than a lot of your folders. What do you go to fixed blades for?
So in the beginning of the channel, I did a lot of fixed blade reviews. I also did some larger chopping ones. I had I still own, but I never show it at the Kukri Machete by Cold Steel. I had a very inexpensive Moonstalker by Condor, which is a great large knife for a very inexpensive price. But then once I found the things that I use and that I like to own in the fixed blade space, I kind of stopped looking for more things because I pretty much got everything covered. Some things I even got like twice because like the use use spectrum for these two is very, very similar. But this is just quite a bit less expensive, and these are like more standard kind of camp knives. This is probably the best inexpensive knife in terms of overall ergonomics for my hand size. And this is like around $100. It's from Kaiser. It's a Dirk Pinkerton design. It's a little over Bowie with a standard kind of rough blade coating.
Like a powder coat.
1095 G10 scale. But with that handle, it's so freaking ergonomic. It's not even funny. Of course, if you're baton with it, you have that swatch which can chew up your baton a little bit. But for everything else, this is pretty much perfect. For $100, you can't really go wrong, and you get a great sheath with it, actually. The drainage hole and everything, good clip that comes with the knife, so pretty much perfect package for an inexpensive knife, and also a knife on a hike or something to give to somebody else if they do not have anything on their person. Other than that, this is probably one of my do-it-all knives that I have for a very long time. This is, I don't really know if this is still in production. This is a Southern Grind full-size Jackal.
Oh, yeah, the Jackal.
And this is also ergonomically amazing. So mainly I'm looking for great ergonomics and also, how do you say, like good management of weight in terms of the purpose you're having. Because this is so heavy that you can do some chopping. You have a good area to strike if you're baton because it's pretty thick up here and doesn't have a stretch in an area where you don't want it for that kind of purpose. But it still manages to get down to a good cutting edge and can be used for whittling, fire sticking, and stuff like that. And then for other things that are really thick, you just have it like for mainly batoning and chopping. And so it's like the same thing, but just a little bit more focused on two things like ergonomics and thick blade thickness and, of course, material.
And point. I am noticing all your fixed blades have points. They're not strict choppers. I like the point on the Jackal. Looks center line, and it looks like, you know, if you needed it for a fight, it would be fine, but it also just looks thick and stout and ready to go for camp stuff. Where do you see the knife world headed in terms of the trends that are happening now? And what do you see becoming big, say, in 2022 in the next couple of years?
In terms of fixed blades or just general?
In terms of folders and general in terms of trends where most people are buying knives, which is folders.
So certainly a big thing that is already coming out is integration of MagnaCut in a lot of different production knives, which is certainly great. We also will see how well it actually performs when we have it also on a wide variety of different companies. We probably will see some companies that have a little bit harder time of correctly heat treating it than others, or just choosing to go a little bit softer to minimize kind of their work with it in terms of warranty. And some other things that I think we will see more is the continuing of the trend of very thin EDC-friendly folders, very thin cutting edge, very thin blade stock as well. And other than that, of course, new locking mechanisms are always a big thing. But I haven't seen like a real trend. I just watched a couple of the Shot Show videos to see what is coming out. But I haven't seen something that is really very new and unseen of. A lot of slip joints have been released from other companies and haven't done that before as well. But I haven't seen a really big trend apart from the MagnaCut that I think is really cool.
I can't wait to get my first MagnaCut knife, just not because I've been needing it because no other steel is adequate, but just to have it. I got to say, I'm very interested in seeing how it sharpens and strops and how it works and all of that. I think the trend of thin, light, sharp, kind of moving away from hard use and more to like, oh, these are knives and they're supposed to cut. Definitely see that happening. But I'm with you. I haven't seen anything yet from SHOT Show where, you know, I've seen some designs that I like, but nothing that seems quite innovative yet. I know Cold Steel has a new lock that they're releasing this year called the Atlas Lock. And I'm sure it makes the Triad lock look like a slip joint, but I'll be interested to see what that's actually like. And I, like you, like this trend of companies coming out with slip joints not just to cover their bases and have a wider product line, but because they're classics and people shouldn't forget about slip joints. Not everything has to lock. Not everyone feels that way. But before I let you go, Treddy, I like to ask YouTubers and knife reviewers, people who invest themselves in evaluating knives and letting everyone else know their worth, I like to do a speed round. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and they're just one-answer questions. I'll ask you a one or the other, and I want to hear what you have to say about these. So are you ready, sir?
Sure.
Okay. Speed round begins now. Fixed or folder?
Folder.
Flipper or thumb stud?
Thumb stud.
Washers or bearings?
Bearings at the moment.
Tip up or tip down?
A tip up.
Tanto or Bowie?
That's hard. Yeah, I don't know. I own a lot of Tantos, but the ones I do, I really love, so I go with Tanto.
Oh, good. Hollow ground or flat ground?
Hollow ground, if I can get it. And if it's nicely done, it's, for me, better than a flat ground.
I like the way it works, and I like the way it looks, and that's important.
Yeah.
Full size or small?
I would have to go with small or mid-size, yeah.
Okay. Gentleman's knife or tactical knife?
It's gentleman's knife, as you can see.
Yeah. Because you are a gentleman, sir. Automatic or bally song?
I can't have both of them.
But if you could, what would you rather
automatic,
have?
Automatic. I have never got the bug for bally song.
Okay, so zero tolerance or Riot?
Riot.
Benchmade or Spyderco?
Benchmade.
Oh, that's beautiful, that oaks. Benchmade over Spyderco. Okay, interesting. Real Steel or Steel Will?
I never actually had anything from Steel Will, so I would go with Real Steel because they have some great watches. So.
All right, actually, let me change this. Let me put it to this. Civivi or CJRB?
I would go with Civivi because they have the better designs for me.
I would agree with you on that. Okay, Mil Titanium or Spring Clip?
That's a hard one because it really depends on how it's done. But in general, in terms of function, I like bend clips better. For example, if like it's done zinc? Like this, it's perfect.
Yeah, and that zinker you held up had a nice looking
clip.
Okay, so carbon fiber or micarta?
These are two of my favorite materials, but I think carbon fiber because at the moment it is more versatile with all the different stuff that it has coming up. Micarta is always more or less the same.
Yeah, interesting. Finger choil or no choil?
I like some choils. I would go choil.
Okay. Form or function?
Function. If it looks great, it doesn't function. It's worse than the other way around.
Okay. I'm fully in the form camp, by the way. Desert island knife. Now, this is the one knife that you can have for the rest of your life. You're not living on the island, but it's a spiritual knife desert island, and you can only have one from this day till the end. What is it?
That's kind of hard. At the moment, I would say probably the Ghee Pogeti Sanyo.
Oh my goodness, we didn't even talk about this. All right.
It is probably the knife with the most beautiful wood handle I have ever seen.
Okay, so this is Gui Pogeti. How do you pronounce his last
name? Gui. So it's a Y at the end. Gui, uh-huh. That's his first name, and Pogeti is Pogeti.
Yeah.
He's a French maker, not Italian.
Oh, okay. Now I like him a little less. No, I'm just kidding. I think this is an absolutely gorgeous knife, and I've been watching him on Instagram, and maybe we'll talk about this for a minute in the interview extras. Tretti, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast. I really appreciate it. It's been great to get to know you a little bit over the last hour because I've been watching you for so long. It's always fun to meet. And so I look forward to see where your collection goes and, where your channel goes.
Thanks again for having me. It was really a fun podcast. Love to show this off and be on these more talkative kind of long form podcast just to give a little bit of insight of why I do the stuff I do and how I do it. And it was also great to know you. And I certainly have been watching more and more of your stuff in the last couple of weeks and months because I kind of found out about you just like the last couple of months. It just kind of went under the radar, but now I really like to listen to some knife podcasts and knife podcasts, of course. And yours now as well is firm in my podcast list of choice.
Awesome. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And as always, we'll keep in touch, and I'd love to have you back on sometime. Tretti, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. Goodbye, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on the knifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at thenifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@thenifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487. And you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.